Good day. My name is Maureen. I will be reading the November 14th, 2024 edition of the Iroquois Times Republic. There are four front page articles. The first one is titled, Watsika High School Hosts Veteran Day Community Assembly. Watsika celebrated Veterans Day on November 11th by holding a community assembly at Watsika Community High School where local veterans were honored. The Watsika chapter of National Honor Society started the morning by serving breakfast to the veterans. Breakfast was sponsored by donors Stuart Swalls of Edward Jones, ABRA or ABRA of Sheldon, Creative in Wood and Tile, and Solo Pub and Eatery. I'm sorry, Silo Pub and Eatery. The program was led by Rick Zebart of the Watsika American Legion, who explained the deep ties that the Watsika Legion has to the creation of Veterans Day. Pastor Ryan Mustard then delivered an inspiring speech about giving thanks to those who have sacrificed much for our country. Later, high school band director Eric Parmenter performed taps during the 21-gun salute. The junior high and high school band joined to play the national anthem and an armed forces medley. All of the children from kindergarten to high school sang God Bless the USA together to close out the program. Even though the gymnasium eventually emptied out as kids and community members left, a strengthened sense of patriotism and connection lingered. The second article is about a fundraiser. Watsika Elks Lodge No. 1791 hosted its annual bingo for cancer fighters, also known as Booby Bingo, Saturday, November 9th. This year's event was the 13th, and it netted the group $8,413. To date, the event has helped Elks give financial assistance to 123 families in Iroquois County who are affected by the costs when incurring fighting cancer. Since the event's inception, $89,490 has been raised and has been kept within the county. According to one of the event's organizers, Cheryl Laurent, it's a number we are humbled and proud of. 13 years ago, the idea of bingo started as a way to let area people know what Lodge No. 1791 could do for the area. The first year, money raised was donated to Relay for Life. However, upon realizing most of the funds went outside of the county, the group, seeing the need of assistance to local families fighting cancer, decided to keep the money in the county. Monies donated to families fighting cancer and the expenses it can inflict can use the funds to help purchase gas to get back and forth to treatments or just keep up with monthly utility bills. According to Laurent, Iroquois County has one of the highest cancer rates in the state. She said, "Cancer has not been a stranger in my family. My mother, brother, nephew, and niece have passed because of this monstrous disease. My twin sister is a breast cancer survivor." In trying to come up with a name for the event, Laurent spoke with her sister to see if she would be offended by the name of Booby Bingo. Her sister responded, "Nope. When is it? I want to be there." Laurent went on to explain the event started out as being a breast cancer bingo, but the need was so large and widespread with all sorts of cancers, our priorities changed. Organizers of the event wanted to be able to conduct bingo without spending money, so they came up with the idea of going to area businesses and asking for donations. All monetary donations go directly into the account for cancer recipients. All other gifts are collected and given away as bingo prizes. Currently, there are 130 businesses which donate, and that number increases each year. Laurent said, "I do interviews on our local radio stations and mention all donors by name. We recognize them the night of bingo and ask people to remember them when they shop locally. It has been great. People want to help. I love walking into a business with my pink folder. They always look at me and ask, 'Is it that time already?'" Cancer patients receive $500 from the Elks, and all money raised stays in the county. Laurent said, "Our donors love this idea." Of importance to the event are those help, they are known as booby buddies, and the following are the ones who have helped for the past 13 years. Leslie Myers, Kim Gawker, Amy Reitz, Brian Hasbargen, Carla Massey, Don Tobeck, Deb Cookie Swigart, Jill Taro, Julie Barnes, Kat Thiel, Lori Yates, Marilyn Conger, Marcia Noth, Sarah Kingdon, Scott Kingdon, Cody Fredericks, Cheryl Laurent, Cy West, Derek Hagen, Denny Lowe, Mark Lehman, Robert Gray, Scott Zumwalt, Tom Riley, Pam Thurston, and Cindy Kaufhauer. Laurent noted this year's volunteers logged hundreds of miles and spent 300 hours collecting gifts. "It's a blessing to be involved in this project," she said. "You cannot help but feel good when you're helping people. We look forward to next year. Please come and join us." It is not too late to donate to the event. You can send monetary donations to Elks Lodge, 1791, or you can drop it off at the lodge, which opens at noon each weekday. Donations made in memorial are a great way to remember a loved one who fought cancer and to help out someone currently fighting some type of cancer. Christmas is coming early this year to Crescent City, as Santa has agreed to participate in a parade and then visit children afterwards. This year's theme is an old-fashioned country Christmas. Everything is set to take place Saturday, November 23rd. Any individual, group, business, club, or family who would like to participate in the parade is invited to do so. Entry forms and waivers are available for pickup in the Crescent City Post Office lobby or by visiting the Facebook page of Crescent City Christmas Celebration and Parade. Questions can be left on the Facebook page. If you have a bicycle, golf cart, ATV, lawnmower, vehicle, tractor, walking unit, whatever, and you want to be in the parade, be sure to pick up a waiver and entry form. Santa himself is providing 3 12-foot-high balloons for the parade. The parade will begin promptly at 1 p.m. The lineup will take place on the north side of the tracks along Jerry Ash Avenue. Entries will cross the tracks and Route 24 by the barbershop, go south to Union Street, east on Union, south on Minor, west on South. Due to a scheduling conflict at some point, the parade will head north, cross Route 24, and end where it began. Grand marshals for this year's parade are the Segebrook family, Arliss, Ryan, Grace, and Val. After the parade, Santa will be in the South Firehouse along 24, where he will get ready to greet boys and girls from about 1:30 or so until 3:30. Time is estimated due to how long the parade will last. The firehouse will remain closed until Santa is ready. The first 100 visitors will receive a treat bag. At the firehouse, children will be able to enjoy light refreshments, write letters to Santa, and color Christmas cards. One for their family or friends, one for a shut-in or nursing home resident. Drawings will also take place throughout Santa's visit. This is a free event sponsored by Santa and the Village of Crescent City. 4 people were taken to the hospital after a house fire in Watseka November 10th. According to information from Watseka Fire Chief Ken Bayer, firefighters were called at 12:15 p.m. to 621 East Mulberry Street. Watseka Fire was paged for a structure fire, he said in his report. Riverside Ambulance arrived first on scene and reported fire coming out of the front door and smoke coming from the back. Riverside stated there were 4 patients on scene that needed transport. Riverside Ambulance recognized the condition of the one patient and called for a helicopter to Iroquois Memorial Hospital before transporting to that location. Bear said that the fire was determined to have started in a living room where a recliner was lit on fire by a child with a lighter. He said 4 people were at the house that day and 2 of them left for a few minutes. The fire report listed no names. Investigation concluded that it was during that time that the fire was started. The 2 adults arrived back home to find fire and heavy smoke in the living room. The chief said flames overcame one of the residents that arrived home as they opened the front door. The other resident that arrived home was a grandfather to the child living at the home, and he quickly went to the back of the house where he was able to make entry into the home and get the child and the great-grandmother out. The great-grandma was transported to IMH and then flown to Loyola with third-degree burns and smoke inhalation. That grandfather that got the great-grandma and child out suffered third-degree burns to hands and smoke inhalation was transported to Riverside ER and then flown to Loyola. The other resident that first opened the front door received first-degree burns to the face and was also transported to Iroquois Memorial and released. The child was transported to Riverside ER and treated for smoke inhalation. Bear said fire crews were faced with heavy fire in the living room. The fire quickly knocked down and primary searches of the structure were conducted and found no other victims. Fire was under control within 20 minutes of the fire crew's arrival. As of this writing, there are no updates on the grandfather and great-grandmother. Bear said there were working smoke detectors in the house. All residents were displaced. A family pet was found deceased. Along with Watsika Fire, Crescent City Fire, Riverside Ambulance, Crescent EMS, Milford Fire, Martinton Fire, and Woodland Fire all responded. Laura F. Keyes, a professional portrayer of historic women, gave a program on Elizabeth Cady Stanton Sunday, November 3rd, in the courtroom of the old Courthouse Museum. The program was arranged by Iroquois County Historical Society, a nonprofit group dedicated to keep the museum maintained so it can remain open to the public. Keyes is well known for her lectures on historic topics and has served on the board of directors of Peck Playhouse Theater. She has been active in community theater in Illinois and Wisconsin since 1999. She is an Illinois librarian who enjoys researching literary symbolism and was contracted to write a book on the subject. Key's portrayal of Stanton takes place in 1866, after the Civil War, but just as the battle for women's suffrage is beginning. It is May 19, 1866, in New York City, and the 11th National Women's Rights Convention took place earlier in the week. The American Equal Rights Association was created at that convention. She and Susan B. Anthony were the main organizers of the association, which sought for equal rights for women and African Americans. Stanton's father, Daniel Cady, was an attorney and became a justice in the New York Supreme Court, and her mother was Margaret. The couple had 11 children. Elizabeth was the 7th, and all the boys died before reaching full adulthood. When Eleazar, her last surviving brother, died at age 20, Elizabeth tried to comfort her father, saying she would try to be all her brother had been. And Mr. Stanton replied by saying, "Oh, my daughter, I wish you were a boy." She had hoped to attend Union College, from which Eleazar had graduated, but as with other colleges, females were not accepted as students. When Elizabeth married Henry Stanton, she had the word obey removed from her wedding vows. At the time of her marriage in 1840, Henry was 34 and she was 24. The couple spent their honeymoon in England, where they attended the World Anti-Slavery Convention in London, to which both were delegates. She was annoyed the male delegates voted to keep the women from participating in the convention. The women had to sit in a separate section away from the men. William Lloyd Garrison, an American abolitionist and supporter of women's rights, had arrived after the men voted. He chose to sit with the women. It was at the convention where Elizabeth met Lucretia Mott, who had also been sent as a delegate. The two women became quick friends. They would work together and support others throughout the quest for women's equality. Later, Elizabeth would meet Susan B. Anthony, and they would become staunch supporters of each other and their work for equality. Anthony was great at organizing events, and Stanton had a way with words and writing. In December 1865, the two submitted the first woman suffrage petition to Congress during the drafting of the 14th Amendment. The women asked for the removal of the word male from the amendment, but Congress declined. Elizabeth took care of the home and children while Henry traveled. She claimed he had no understanding of her life as she dealt with the children and home. The couple had seven children, and daughter Harriet would follow in her mother's footsteps. Women were literally servants to their husbands. Husbands were allowed to beat their wives with a stick as long as it wasn't wider than his thumb. A man could leave his wife and get a divorce, but women could not. Keyes shared a story in which a woman purchased a farm with her inheritance, but when her husband died, he left the farm to their son, who had no interest or know-how on how to manage the property. The woman tried and tried to get what was rightfully hers as she had made the purchase, but the laws were clear as to heirship and the woman had no rights to the property. The only fix was for the law to be changed. Stanton and Anthony organized the Women's Loyal National League, in which they campaigned for the abolishment of slavery. It was widely known the league also pushed for equality of women. Stanton was offered the office of president of this group, but she declined, so Lucretia Mott took the position. Together, Anthony and Stanton wrote The History of Women's Suffrage, which contains an enormous amount of material used throughout their years of working together for equal rights. Stanton would spend many years traveling extensively giving speeches. Elizabeth Stanton died October 26, 1902, in New York City, 18 years before women would get the right to vote. Iroquois County Historical Society is pleased to announce the Old Courthouse Museum will host its 56th annual Christmas Tree Lane in addition to a Christmas House Gallery. The museum is located at 103 West Cherry in Watseka. Hours are 10 to 4, Monday through Friday. For more information, you can call 815-432-2215 or visit the group's website for the Iroquois County Historical Society.com. This year's theme is Christmas at the Movies. ICHS members have set up several trees throughout the museum. If you have a specific place you want to decorate a tree, you need to get it reserved as soon as possible. Decorators need to provide their own decorations and lights. It is asked decorations not include glitter or food products. The deadline to decorate a tree or to bring in a house is 4 p.m. Wednesday, November 27th. All trees can be entered in the categories of Best Decorated and People's Choice. Decorators can then choose one of these three categories to also be included in for judging: Best Handcrafted Ornaments, Most Original, and Best Use of Theme. Tree decorating is now underway during normal business hours. The museum will be closed Thursday and Friday, November 28th, 29th, for Thanksgiving. Christmas Tree Lane and Christmas House Gallery officially open Sunday, December 1st, when the museum will be open 1 to 4 for its annual Christmas open house. Voting by museum visitors on their favorite trees and houses will begin December 1st and goes through Monday, December 23rd. There will be another special opening 1 to 4 on Sunday, December 15th. The museum will be open 1 to 4 Thursday the 26th and will be closed December 27th through January 1st. All tree decorations and house gallery entries need to be removed by 4 p.m. January 7th. Christmas house gallery entries can be made of almost any medium as long as it is no larger than what can be handled safely and will fit inside a display case. Houses do not necessarily have to follow the theme of tree decorating. Trees and houses can be entered by any individual, group, club, organization, business, family, or classroom. There is a brief paragraph about St. Paul's Chapel, that the first quarter collection was divided four ways to support area food pantries. According to information provided, Zion Lutheran Clifton Community Food Bank was the first recipient. God's Food Pantry, that's uppercase G-O-D, of St. Paul's Lutheran Church, also received a donation. The Watsika Food Pantry at First United Methodist Church and the Milford Ministerial Association both received funds. The Women's Association of the Watsika Presbyterian Church will conduct the Fall Rummage Sale November 15th to 16th. The sale will be from noon to 5 Friday and 9 to noon Saturday. A $3 bag sale will be from 10 to noon Saturday. Items include holiday decorations, clothing, kitchen items, dishes, toys, and furniture. All proceeds towards mission projects. There are two police-related articles. The first is, a St. Anne man was killed in a single vehicle accident November 7th in rural Beaverville. According to Iroquois County Sheriff's police reports, Robert Hubert, 68, was killed in the accident on 3200 North near 3130 East Roads. Initial investigation indicates a 95 Chevy Blazer driven by Hubert was eastbound when, for unknown reasons, the vehicle traveled into the north ditch, striking a tree stump and causing the vehicle to roll. The vehicle came to rest on the passenger side. The EMS teams from St. Anne, Beaverville, and Riverside responded to extract Hubert from the vehicle. LifeStar helicopter from Joliet was requested and transported him from the scene. He was pronounced deceased while en route to Christ Hospital. Illinois State Police Division of Criminal Investigation agents arrested 24-year-old Connor Galonsky, G-I-L-O-N-S-K-E, of Hoopston, for possession and dissemination of child sexual abuse material. According to information from ISP, after receiving a cyber tip, ISP agents began an investigation into the possession and dissemination of child sexual abuse material by that individual. On November 7th, they located and arrested him in Danville. A subsequent residential search warrant was executed as his residence in Hoopston. He is being held at the Vermilion County Public Safety Building pending his first court appearance. Article titled, Juvenile Justice Council's Red Ribbon Week Activities Promote Prevention. Red Ribbon Week, the nation's oldest and largest drug prevention awareness campaign, takes place every year, October 23rd to 31st. Since 1985, parents and youth have worn red ribbons during the week as a symbol of their commitment to raise awareness of the death and destruction caused by drugs in America. An estimated 80 million young Americans took part in activities this year. According to information provided, the Juvenile Justice Council of Iroquois County, under direction of Iroquois County State's Attorney Jim Devine, planned numerous local activities to celebrate. This year's theme was Life is a Movie, Film Drug-Free. The JJC partnered with every junior high school in the county to host a quick movie premiere-themed trivia activity during each school's lunch periods. This fun lunchtime activity allowed the JJC to deliver additional important prevention messaging without disrupting the curriculum. Students wishing to participate were treated like movie stars as they were interviewed with a fake microphone by being asked a Red Ribbon Week or prevention-themed trivia question before walking the red carpet. After discussing the answer to a trivia question, students played the grand prize game by attempting to throw bean bags into buckets to win a small prize. Students also had the opportunity to interact with the JJC's mascot, Ollie the Owl. In the obituary section, Erica A. Fisher, 53 years of age, of Aledo, Illinois, passed away Sunday, November 10th. Memorial services will be held in Watsika next spring. Memorial contributions may be left to Mercer Manor Rehabilitation. Elizabeth Ann Liz Thompson, 94 years of age, of Watsika, passed away Saturday, November 9th. Funeral services will be Tuesday, November 12th at 1 p.m. at Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the funeral service. Memorials may be made to First Presbyterian Church of Watsika, Unit 9 Academic Foundation, or Iroquois Memorial Hospital. Doris I. Maxwell, Imogene, 100 years of age, of Rensselaer, passed away Sunday, November 10th. Visitation will be held on Saturday, November 16th, from 10 to noon at Jackson Funeral Chapel of Rensselaer, followed by a funeral service at noon, Central Time. Interment will take place at Weston Cemetery Memorial. Contributions may be made to the First Christian Church. Stephen B. Frodge, F-R-O-D-G-E, 74 years of age, of Attica, passed away Wednesday, November 6th. As per Steve's desire, cremation services were accorded him and a private family celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Delmas Conley, 80 years of age, of Rensselaer, passed away November 9th. Visitation will be Saturday, November 16th, from 8:30 a.m. until time of funeral at 12:30 p.m. at Bible Baptist Church in Rensselaer. Burial will follow at Memory Garden Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Bible Baptist Church. Steinke Funeral Home is honored to be handling the arrangements. Evelyn Lois Musch, M-U-S-C-H, 84 years of age, of DeMott, Indiana, passed away November 11th. Family and friends are invited to visit at the funeral home on Friday, November 15th, from 9 to 11, with the funeral service beginning at 11. The service will be officiated by Pastor. Interment will follow at Holland Cemetery. There is an article regarding Indiana's occupational injury rate. Fewer than 3 out of 100 full-time Hoosier workers got hurt or sick on the job last year, according to a federal survey released Friday. It is Indiana's lowest rate since data collection began in the early 90s. The 2.6 non-fatal occupational injury and illness rate is down from 2022's rate of 2.9, but it is slightly above the national average of 2.4. Indiana leaders celebrated, ascribing the drop to safety protocols. The Indiana Department of Labor Commissioner David Redden said, "These decreasing rates show how employers across the Hoosier state realize the importance of safety training and its impact in the workplace. We encourage all businesses to continue to follow Occupational Safety and Health Administration safety standards and take advantage of continual safety education for all workers." 9 industries recorded decreased non-fatal injury and illness rates compared to 2022, according to the agency's website. Among them were healthcare and social assistance, manufacturing, transportation, warehousing, and utilities. Article regarding teacher vacancies. New federal data shows the majority of the country's public K-12 schools had difficulty hiring fully certified teachers heading into the current academic year, and Indiana districts are not immune to vacancies. As of Thursday, the Indiana Department of Education's job board listed more than 1,300 available educator jobs statewide. That is an improvement from earlier this year when there were 2,200 vacancies, but many openings remain. Most of the unfilled positions in Indiana are for elementary, early childhood, and special education positions. Special education remained the most difficult teaching position to hire for this year. Teaching salaries have also largely failed to keep up with inflation, and teachers' morale declined following the pandemic. National experts cited increased issues with student behavior and a rise in mental health problems as contributing factors, too. Republican Governor-elect Mike Braun did call for a raise in Hoosier teachers' base salaries and guaranteed professional benefits like new parent leave as well as improved health insurance options. This concludes reading this week's edition. We thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your week.